Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to I'd Sooner Forget This, a podcast where guests share with me things from their past that I've forced them to drag up. For example, when I was 15, I wrote a poem called Heroin, despite the fact that I've never taken drugs, that went, dancing rabbits and marshmallow trees. Why take heroin? Why take heroin? Evil monsters are going to kill me. Heroin, ecstasy, lithium, herbal tea. I'm Daryl Smith, and with me today is juggler and comedian John Udry.
Hello.
How's your current feeling towards what we're going to look at?
I'm a little anxious. I mean, you know, there's a reason a lot of people haven't seen this stuff. It's because it's pretty embarrassing. But I think I've got quite a lot of stuff that I don't usually like talking about. And that's why I'm here.
What is it that we're going to look at today?
So I've got a video from when I was 12 years old. It wasn't one of my first shows. One of my first shows was around 10, but I couldn't find the footage. So this is 12 years old, so I was a little bit more experienced. Got 2 years of experience under my belt. And it's a performance from when I was part of the Junior Cornish Magical Society.
I've got so many questions I already want to ask, but I think we need to just watch some of this.
Okay.
First.
Okay.
We got John Udry.
Don't really know who this guy is.
He's still age 12. Still age 12, and this time he's going to show us how to jump. Welcome, John.
Here he is. Oops, not gonna start. The audio of this track I recorded from a VHS of a juggling convention. So it's got applause points and stuff in it, which is the audience from the video. So when you hear people clapping, it's not the people there. It's absolutely disgusting.
I don't know, you're quite the showman.
Thanks, man. It really annoys me that I'm still wearing a watch on stage. And I've got a stupid bow tie. I mean, there's a lot that annoys me about this.
Describe what you're wearing.
I've got my school trousers on, which to this day, any black trousers are still called school trousers, despite the fact I haven't been in school for over 10 years. Got school trousers on, got some Clarks shoes on. Doing a lot of drop in there. I've got my brother's orange shirt. And I've got a sparkly black waistcoat. And a black bow tie. I don't know where this black waistcoat came from. I still don't really know.
It's quite the spectacle.
It's revolting. And the thing is, I don't know where it is now. Someone must have helpfully thrown it away from me because I don't know what happened to it.
This is pretty impressive for a 12-year-old.
Thanks, mate. It's just revolting, isn't it? It's just.
It's great.
There we go. And there it is. Little 12-year-old me.
Wow.
Thanks. Wow, indeed. That makes me feel sick, having a look at that.
See, it's interesting, because I don't know anything about juggling. You're watching it and seeing a lot of the techniques that you're either doing well or not doing well at all. But what is it that's making you most uncomfortable about
The actual juggling of the routine, I mean, I'm pretty happy with that, really. You know, I was 12, I wasn't meant to be good. It's the little nods and like nodding and almost winking at the audience and trying to be a bit too Vegas-y. It was out of date even then. And this was, I don't know how many years ago, 12, 16 years ago. And it was out of date then.
Were you trying to replicate someone else?
Well, yeah, because at this time, the only juggling I really saw was from VHSs of juggling conventions from the 1980s. So that was my only reference. So this must have been around the year 2000, maybe 1999. And the only juggling I've ever seen was mid to late 80s. So I was just kind of replicating that. And yeah, it's gross. It's almost grotesque. It's revolting. And yeah, I mean, the orange shirt, again, that's just my brother's. And I think it was a shirt that was white, that he dyed orange to go with some kind of costume, a fancy dress party. And I saw that and thought, oh yeah, that'd be perfect. That's what I need.
So is your brother a performer as well?
No, not at all. They do a little bit, like they can juggle a little bit, but they don't perform at all. The idea of performing makes them terrified. It's kind of not part of the family. I'm the only one in the family who kind of enjoys going on stage, really.
So what, you started juggling at 10 years old?
I started when I was 6.
Really?
I started the Diablo, which is like, for those of you that don't know, like you got two sticks and a bit of string going between, and you have this kind of big cotton reel thing that you throw around on it. And I did that from when I was 6, just because my brother and my next door neighbours did it. There's also a guy on the beach called the Great Bodget. And he used to do shows like throughout the summer where he would do juggling magic and Diablo. And I used to watch him all the time. So I just kind of... He was a massive inspiration to me. I just picked up on anything that he did. So I learned loads of Diablo from him. And I started getting into magic as well, like every cool kid does. And yeah, I started juggling around the age of 10. And whenever I went to school, I'd always have juggling balls in my bag or juggling clubs or whatever. Yeah, I was that cool kid.
That's amazing.
Is it amazing?
Well, the thing is that you're now a professional juggler.
Yeah.
And like, so you basically learned those skills. Like you've been
learned at school.
Yeah, at school.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a waste of school if I didn't become a professional juggler.
Yeah.
It would have been a shame. Well, in Cornwall, there's a Cornish Magical Society, which is like the Magic Circle, but in Cornwall. And it's a group of people. And I joined the Junior Cornish Magical Society when I was around 10. And once a week I'd go... and meet with like a room full of magicians, and I'd get a chance to talk shop with these pros, really. And it was quite good. And every year, actually twice a year, we did a summer season, a summer show and a winter show, where we would hire out a village hall, and there'd be a bunch of us kind of, I say professionals, I was the only one who wasn't really. A bunch of pros would do a show in a village hall, and they would let me be in it. Which was quite good. So that is, for me, like even though it was just a village hall, it was like showbiz at its best, in my opinion. It kind of had that dank village hall smell and your feet kind of stuck to the floor. And I was doing that from around the age of 11 and 12. It was perfect.
So like there was a bit of a giggle at the start when they said your age, and that's because you were the youngest
one
there.
Oh, by far the youngest. Yeah, I think the first one I did was around the age of 10, and that's when I'd perform magic as well. I mean, I saw some footage of that not long ago, and that was... I mean, terrible to see. Oh, that was not good at magic at all. Is this place haunted?
No, this door is crap. So I normally have to have a George Orwell's collection of
books. Oh, that's good.
Where were we?
I was the youngest in the group.
So which beach was this?
Perranporth Beach, which is a great beach, by the way. You should go there if you haven't been. And it was the Cornish Magical Society that I joined around the age of 10. And that was, I believe it was in Camborne, another place in Cornwall. But the guy I met on the beach who was doing shows, the Great Bodget, he was nothing to do with the Cornish Magical Society. But I met, like around that time, I met quite a few characters who kind of shaped my career. There was the Great Bodget, who did the shows on the beach. There was the Cornish Magical Society. But there's a woman as well called Blossom the Clown. She used to do random workshops throughout the summer, just like on the promenade or on the beach or whatever. And I would go along and do these circus skills workshops. She'd just have loads of equipment and just let the kids run free on it. And I used to go to these, and she was amazing. She was quite an old lady. She must have been in her 50s at the time. And she must have been older. She must have been in her 60s. And she was still doing these little workshops. She'd wear a clown makeup and stuff. And I kind of got to know her really well. My mum and dad got to know her really well. And it got to the point where, like, she lived on a farm. I'd go down to the farm and practice for the day, and she'd just teach me loads of stuff. And I remember once, I must have been, you know, I must have been 10. Like, the oldest of 10. I might have been 9. I remember she said to me, John, do you want to learn how to juggle fire? And I was like, yeah, totally. Of course I want to learn how to juggle fire. And she was like, look, well, I'm just going to call your mum. And she called up my mum, and she said, hi, Denise, do you mind if I teach your son how to juggle fire? I'll be really safe with it and everything. There'll be no problem. And my mom was like, yeah, fine, no problem. And she's just fine with it. So then that afternoon, I was just juggling fire down on this farm. I was like lighting them up and you know, running the paraffin out and then doing it again. I was just stank of paraffin, just like burning paraffin all day. It was brilliant. Just with this old lady clam.
This is an amazing way of spending your, like...
It was great.
At 10 years old, juggling fire.
On a farm of an old clam's.
You couldn't have not ended up being a juggler.
No. No, and I mean, that's not even all the... So other people that shaped my career, there's a guy called... The thing is, it sounds like I'm making these up. But there's a guy called Wilbur the Great. He was a clown as well. He was more into magic and stuff. And he juggled a little bit, but he used to do loads of magic. And I must have been 14. And he was like, John, I've just retired. I've got all this magic stuff that I don't want anymore. And he just gave it to me. I just had boxes of this old magic stuff. I was like, sweet, amazing. And there's another company that I actually started working as a juggler. Like the first time I started getting paid was around the age of 11. But I got approached by a company called Jungle Bungle Jugglers. And they lived in a caravan park called the Monkey Tree. And they were professional jugglers. And they used to go around all the holiday parks in Cornwall. And they would do circus skills workshops and shows. And they were like, John, do you want to work with us? I was like, yeah, I think so. And I remember they sat down in my parents' living room. They spoke with my parents and stuff. And the next thing I know, from the age of 11, I was a working man. Like, I was, like, every weekend and school holidays, I would be doing shows at holiday parks and doing circus skills workshops. I was juggling and getting paid from the age of 11, which was mad. And that was down to Jungle Bungle Jugglers. I can never say Jungle Bungle Jugglers and not smirk. It's a ridiculous name.
It's an amazing name.
Jungle Bungle Jugglers.
Are Jungle Bungle Jugglers still around?
No, they're not. I don't know what happened to them. They've vanished. Like, I don't know where they are. But yeah, it was down to, you know, Jungle Bungle, Wilbur the Great, Blossom the Clown, the Great Bodget, and the Cornish Magical Society. It sounds like a Harry Potter movie.
Yeah, it's like it seems like it's a shame that performing magicians have moved away from names like that. Like, you just call yourself John Newtree.
Well, that wasn't the case back in the day. I have been John Udry since I was born, but like professionally since around the age of like 17. But before that, I went by a variety of different names. So when I started, I was obviously inspired by the Great Bodget, and I was kind of thinking, okay, well, I need to have a name similar to that because, you know, that's just what people do. And so I went with the Great Alphonse. So I was the Great Alphonse for at least a year. Because my great uncle was called Alphonse, and I just thought, oh, the Great Alphonse is perfect. So I soon steered clear of that. And then when I was working with Jungle Bungle, the guy who was called Rick, he didn't like having lots of stuff in his pockets. And back then, you know, people had massive mobile phones and like huge keys and stuff for the van. And he just used to say, look, John, can you just put this in your pockets? So I'd have my stuff in my pockets plus his stuff in my pockets. So then he used to call me Johnny Pockets, which I hated. And there's still people out there who call me Johnny Pockets. And I hate it. I really hate it. And it comes from that time. I was also worked with a company called Swamp Circus, which I worked for. That was more the age of 16, 17. And the guy who runs that, Brett, he still calls me Pockets. And I'm 28 years old. So yeah, I went through the Johnny Pockets phase a little bit, which I never really liked. So then I kind of got to the age, you know, when I was growing up around 15, 16, that I just thought, I'm just going to use my own name. And here I am.
Who filmed this?
It must have been my dad, my mum and my dad.
It's got that classic kind of like graininess to like an old VHS recorder.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was actually filmed straight onto VHS as well, because well, I only got this digitalized at Christmas time. I got all my parents' VHS's digitalized. Is that the right word?
I think so, yeah.
I got all the VHS's digitalized for all my family members and put them onto USB sticks. So this is where this came from, and which is the first time I've seen this. I mean, I only saw it recently, but for before that, I haven't seen it for over 10 years.
Do you remember this day?
No. Well, I remember bits of it. I know a few other people who were on the bill. But yeah, I remember bits of it. Like, I remember we used to do we used to have to hand out leaflets in the street in the daytime, and we were told what to say. And so I think it was I can't remember what it was, but we had to just say it 100 times. I could interest you in a leaflet for the show tonight at the Memorial Hall. Like, I'm just handing out leaflets. I remember we used to do that in the street and try and do tricks in the street to get people in. I remember there's a few of the old timers who performed there as well. We'd all sit backstage, and I remember there's like a nice table of snacks, which is great. We got paid in snacks, which at some gigs that you get paid for, you don't even have snacks. Yeah, it was a good time. I just remember, like, I went back to that stage probably about a year ago. It was the first time I've seen it in about 10 years. And it's tiny. But I remember back then feeling like it was, it was Vegas. And there's no like sound check or tech-in or anything, no checking the lights. It's just like, okay, there's one light in state on, and that was it. You couldn't alter anything. It was quite kind of nice. It was kind of I don't know. It was raw. Which, if you see the video, that's the last word you'd use to describe that act.
What I quite liked about watching that is that you look incredibly confident.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Like, the fact that even when you dropped the balls, like, you made it part of the show.
Well, I think like there's a lot of bad stuff that happened before that. I remember at least for the first couple years, I never used to, like, smiling on stage was just a thing that I could never do. And I would finish an act and people would come and say, "Oh, that was great, but you know, you could maybe just try smiling." And I was just like, "Oh yeah, I thought I did." But I was just terrified, you know. You for the first few times, like, being up there is not fun. It's horrible. It's terrifying. You spend weeks and weeks and weeks trying to perfect an act. You go and do it in front of a group of people, and you just can't do any of it. You know, you're just too scared. So I think there, I'm at this. I've probably got a few acts under my belt. This isn't even the first act I've ever done. This is probably maybe the third routine I've made. I remember the first one I did was to Robbie Williams, "Let Me Entertain You." Classic track. And yeah, that one, it was really like, I couldn't even look at the audience. I couldn't, if I looked at the audience or tried to smile, I'd just have a panic attack. Mm. I'd just freak out. So yeah, I've done a few bad things before this one.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
From what it sounds like, your parents were like uber supportive of your juggling.
Yeah, like super supportive. They'd drop me to workshops. They would like, it seems mad, but like they would just happily leave me at a stranger's house juggling on an afternoon, like with just a random man. And that was just totally fine when I was like 10 years old. And I mean, it was fine. Obviously, nothing's going to go wrong, but like it feels like if that would happen today, people, it would kind of be frowned upon. Like, you know, if my sister had left, just dropped their kid off and, you know, or even said, okay, just go to a juggling convention for a week by yourself, it would be kind of weird. But for some reason it was just fine. It was, I think my parents kind of chatted to the people and they trusted them, and you know, my parents have always been supportive of everything I've done. And yeah, I think they just kind of trusted it, you know. I think when it came to doing it professionally as a job, I did have a kind of backup plan, which failed. I was training to be an electrician, and I did that for, it was a 3-year apprenticeship, but I did that for a year, and then I got sacked. I got sacked for taking a juggling gig. Basically, I got approached by a company in London called Gandini Juggling, who I was just a huge, huge fan of, and still am, really. And I was, I think, 17, and they said, John, do you want to come to London and do a gig with us? But at the time, I was working on this electrical apprenticeship, and I was entitled to time off, but I asked my boss for it, and he said no. So then I kind of had this conundrum, like, what do I do? And I spoke to my parents about it, and they said, look, just call his bluff. Just go to London anyway and see what happens. So I said to my boss, you know, what happens if I go? And he said, well, I'm going to sack you. So I did what my parents said and called his bluff, went to London, did the gig, came back, and he sacked me. So he totally just sacked me. So then I just said to my parents, look, my electrical apprenticeship was a backup, so why don't I just try and be a juggler for a year? And if that doesn't work, I'll go back and I'll finish my apprenticeship. At least then I've got a solid backup. So they're like, fine, do your thing. Which is great, really, that they could just support that. And yeah, I just packed up and just moved to London and just tried to be a juggler. And it was tough, but it worked out, obviously, because I'm here chatting to you.
So how long did you live in London? Because you now live in Bristol.
I live in Bristol now. I did live in London for 7 years. I think the age of 18 to 25. That's 7, isn't it? No, that's not. 8 years I lived in London then. I moved there when I was 18, and I moved to Bristol when I was 26. Yeah, 8 years in London, which is like 7 years too many, in my opinion. It's just a hectic place.
And were you with that same juggling group the whole time?
I did bits with them. I did quite a few shows with them. But like because a lot of people work for the company, Gandini Juggling, you can't really rely on your money coming in just through them, because they've got lots of different projects on. So it started off, I did... most of my work was through them. And then I kind of started to do more shows by myself. I did street shows. And then I started to get a feel for what I wanted to do. Still just trying to find myself, you know, and just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, in a sense, I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm doing lots of solo shows now, but I'm still trying to figure out what kind of solo shows I want to do. But yeah, with Gandini, I worked with them. It would vary. Sometimes I'd do like 2 months of stuff that's purely with them, and then I'd do some shows by myself, and it'd vary quite a lot. And that's kind of what I enjoy about this job, is that like it's different all the time. You know, 1 week you could be in a show with 20 people, the next week you could be downstairs of a pub somewhere, the next week on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. I love the fact that it changes all the time, because I've got a really short attention span.
At the time when this video was made, you obviously were juggling like loads. Mm-hmm. Like, were you doing anything else like in your free time, or were you super focused on this?
Yeah, well, I juggled a lot. Like, I used to come from school and just juggle. But I also used to skateboard. I played the drums. I also did judo as well. My dad was a judo coach, so I did quite a bit of judo at the time. I was always a fan of doing stuff. We never had computer games in the household. They just weren't allowed. And for me, it was the best thing my parents could ever do, because the rule was, if it's not raining, you just had to be outside. That was kind of like what we had to do. You couldn't watch TV in the daytime if it wasn't raining. TV was a thing that just happened when it was raining. You couldn't watch TV if it wasn't raining. So we just had to do stuff, and we just played. I had brothers, and me and my brothers just played with stuff. You know, we'd play with Diablos, we'd go skateboarding, we would just, you know, do stupid stuff, water fights. It was brilliant. Like, if I got into computer games, I feel like I've got quite an addictive personality. And computer games is a thing that I feel like if I went down that road, that would kind of be my life. And so, yeah, for me, that's why I just can't really get into that, because I'm more of a doer, like an outsidey kind of physical doer.
Were there any other people that, like your age, that you were juggling with?
Yeah. So my neighbours and my brother did the Diablo, and my neighbours also juggled a little bit. There's a friend of my neighbour called Rupert, and Rupert was quite a good juggler. Like, me and him did a double act at one point, where we'd dress up as peasants in Hessian sacks and tights. I think I was 12, he must have been like 16, and we used to call ourselves the Flying Buttresses. And we just did this kind of street show act as these like peasants, which is kind of fun, you know, fun to work with someone. But he doesn't juggle at all anymore. He still uses the name the Flying Buttresses, but he's got these amazing puppets now. Like, he makes amazing puppets and he does like walkabout characters in these puppets. Like, you might have even seen them at festivals and stuff. They're two like travelers, Hodman, Dodmanot and Sally Forth are their names. Yeah, the Flying Buttresses. They're really good. So yeah, I juggled with him quite a bit. And then when I was in school, a couple of friends kind of got into juggling a little bit as well. Andy Hoskin and Chris Wickets, they juggled a bit. But no one had the obsession and addiction as much as I did. Like, I was kind of hooked. Like, I couldn't not do it. And still to this day, if I don't juggle for a couple of days, I get really itchy like, and antsy. I kind of need to do it. For me, it's like, it's what I do to relax. Like, some people have yoga, some people... I don't know, do crack. For me, it's juggling. Like, I need to go away, have an hour or two a day, and then I feel normal again. Because if I don't have it, I just feel a bit mental.
You say it's like a way of relaxing.
Yeah, and like, I don't want anyone else involved. I put my headphones on. I don't want anyone to talk to me in those hours. I just go to a place. I practice at a gym, which I'm not going to say where it is in case anyone goes. And it's great. I love it. I practice in a studio at a gym, and I go there, and the headphones on. I practice for a few hours. I go into my own little world. And I come out feeling normal again. It's great. But it's a thing that I really struggle to not do it now. I mean, I've kind of done that rhythm of practicing most days for the past 22 years. I can't all of a sudden stop doing it and it feels normal. At Christmas, I try and stop. I give myself a couple of weeks where I don't do any practice over Christmas, usually from like Christmas Eve to New Year's Day or whatever. And it's healthy for me, but I do struggle with it. Like, I do feel like I need to do something, but I purposefully try and take that time off just because I think it's probably good for my brain. But even though it's a struggle,
I suppose it's good to be addicted to something which is like, what, one, not bad for anyone involved.
No,
and like basically pays your bills.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I'm addicted to my job, which is sick, really.
It's the dream.
Yeah, it's the dream.
So you say you were juggling at school, so you would also juggle on the school playground?
Yeah, lunchtime, tuck time, I'd go out and do a little bit of practice. Yeah, the thing is, like, looking back at that, I feel like, at the time, I feel like I had lots of friends, but that was a thing that I'd definitely just do by myself. But I didn't feel like I was a lonely kid, even though when I say, oh, you know, at school, I just used to practice in the playground. To me, it was like, well, I mean, that's the thing I want to do. I've still got friends, but they want to play football and I don't want to do that. So I'm going to juggle instead. I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything. I was doing the exact thing I wanted to do. They were doing the exact thing they wanted to do. And then we'd meet up later for maths. Like, it didn't feel like I was a lonely kid. But like, looking back on it, I was alone a lot. But I never felt lonely. I never felt like, I mean, I like having friends, but I also like doing juggling. Mainly, maybe because it's a thing that is by myself. I don't know.
Surely people like watched you.
But the thing is, they probably watched me do stuff for a day or two. And then the novelty's worn off. Because like, when I practice, I don't perform. Like, the difference between me being on stage and me practicing, they're two completely different people. Like, the guy on stage is there trying to impress people. The guy practicing doesn't want people to watch. So I'll almost turn my back on them and do stuff. Like, you know, I'll just practice stuff with one ball. Stuff that's not... Because watching someone practice isn't an interesting thing to watch, really. I seem to remember people watching a little bit, but then after you've seen me practice for a couple of times, you just want to go and play football.
Yeah, I can see that. The novelty wears off.
Yeah, they'll just be like, oh, that's where John does his juggling over there. And I'm just part of the furniture then, which is perfect.
What was the main things which were, like, giving you, say, anxiety watching this video?
I don't know, like... It's just trying to find yourself, isn't it, on stage? Like, I think, like, someone said to me once that about street shows, that the first 100 street shows don't count. And someone said it again about, like, open mic nights, that the first 100 gigs you do don't count because you're just trying to figure out what you do. And I think this was at the point where I probably haven't done 100 shows at this point, but I've definitely done 30 shows at this point, I reckon. And it's kind of just looking back and being like, what is he trying to do? What is he trying to achieve? Like, he's nodding at the audience and like weird little poses. And I didn't really understand, like, looking at it. I see what I was going for, because I was going for juggling convention videos from the 1980s. But this was the year 2000. But I wasn't aware that that was weird. And probably the people in the audience weren't aware that it was weird either. But to me, it seems more dated than it should be. That's just down to my sources, really.
What made you basically become a modern juggler as opposed to a little boy trying to be a 1980s juggler?
Well, I thought juggling, up until the age of around 16, I thought juggling was waistcoats and bow ties and smart trousers and jackets and maybe top hats and big band music, maybe classical music. That's what I thought juggling was, which in a sense didn't really interest me. I mean, I like jazz music, but all the other stuff, that's not how people dress. People don't wear sparkly waistcoats out and about. So I didn't really get it. Like, I didn't see the people on stage and think, oh, I want to do that. It just didn't appeal to me. And then I saw a juggler. I must have been around the age of 16, called Jay Gilligan, who, I mean, he's amazing and he's my total idol. And he kind of changed my life when it came to juggling. He used to go on stage and he'd play music like the Smashing Pumpkins or, you know, like Dave Matthews Band, or like lots of music that I liked. He would play kind of rock music and he'd go out with jeans and a t-shirt and he just did these juggling routines to music that was relevant. And like, he wore clothes that people wear as opposed to just people in 1980s juggling videos. And so it was him and a guy called Sean McKinney, who were just amazing American jugglers who, I mean, they're still my favorite jugglers. Sean McKinney sadly isn't with us anymore. But like, Sean McKinney entered the IJA is the International Jugglers Association. And in America, they have these big competitions where you go on and you've got your waistcoats and your bow ties and you do a little routine and like usually to big band music. And then you get judged by some panels and stuff, some people on the panel. And Sean McKinney went there with ripped jeans and a t-shirt. And he's like, oh, I want to do a routine. And he's an amazing juggler. He had a great routine. And they were just like, no, you can't do it. You can't do it because you've got rips in your jeans. And he was like, no, this is my costume. I've chose this for a reason. And they're like, no, you can't do it. So he goes away, buys some jeans that don't have rips in, comes back, does the competition, wins. Of course. And it was just at that point, it was amazing where to see that shift in everyone's doing a different routine in their school trousers and sparkly waistcoats and top hats. And all of a sudden, some guy comes along. He comes on stage on a skateboard
wow.
with jeans and a t-shirt and just rocks out for like 7 minutes of the best stuff you've ever seen. And it was just amazing, like baggy t-shirt, baggy jeans, scruffy hair. It's brilliant. So it's at that point that kind of juggling changed for me. And I just kind of thought that there's no rules. You can do whatever you like. So then around that time, I started using tracks for routines that I just liked. So I'd use Pearl Jam or Audio Slave or just bands that I enjoyed. I'd just use their tracks. And it was great. But I was hugely inspired by Sean McKinney and Jay Gilligan, really. Like without that shift in juggling, I probably either wouldn't be doing it as a profession or I would be, you know, in top hats and tails and sparkly, glittery, whatever. Like now, as a principal, I have no glitter or anything shiny in any of my shows. Some people still use like shiny clubs because when they spin, it looks like they go quicker, or like, you know, glittery rings or like top hats and stuff. And purposefully in my show, I've got a no glitter policy, nothing that shines.
I don't know if this is secrets now, but what are some of your other policies?
So other policies, I don't do anything dangerous. I feel like the whole juggling of fake knives and chainsaws and fire torches, that's been done to death, 20, 30 years ago. So I don't do anything dangerous. And I don't go on a big high bike, big high unicycle, because that, again, has been done to death. And I also don't do anything that glows in the dark, because I think it's just been done a lot. So when I made my show, I just said to myself, okay, I'm going to have no sparkles. I'm not going to have any dangerous props. I'm not going to do anything high like a unicycle or a bike. And I'm not going to do anything with LED props. Just because I think it's been done too much. And if you give yourself those restrictions, then it forces you to try and make something else. And if the something else is rubbish, that's better than it being the same as everyone else, I think. I'd prefer to do something that's different and less good than the same and really good. It just doesn't interest me. Like, I'd prefer to be an accountant. No offense to any accountants out there. I'd prefer to be an accountant than to be the juggler that just does the same material as everyone else does. Doing the same material as everyone else, it wouldn't interest me at all. I'd prefer to just be an accountant, which I'm sure is a lovely job for the right person.
So if you could go back to this day, and speak to yourself just before you walked onto that stage, like, what would you tell yourself?
I'd tell myself, if you're going to go do a show, you have to have fun, because people don't want to watch someone not have fun. So I would say, take your stupid bow tie off, untuck your shirt, you know, and put some music on that you actually like, and just go out and have fun. Because you could go out and have fun and, like, do some fun juggling to good music that you like, and people will enjoy it, because people enjoy watching people enjoy themselves. So if I'm out there having fun, then it can't go wrong. Even if I drop my tricks, it doesn't matter, because I'm enjoying it. So that's what I'd say to myself. And at the end of the day, I'd say to myself, it's only juggling. It doesn't matter, really. Like, in my show, I've got a 45-minute show. I still drop in it all the time. It doesn't matter. It's fine. No one's died. It's absolutely fine. It's only juggling. It's not important.
Amazing. John, how do you feel now that the world is aware of this video?
I feel like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders. And it's thanks to you. It's like therapy.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. If people wanted to see you perform, how could they find out?
You could follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. My name is John Udry, and there's no H in the John, and Udry is spelt U-D-R-Y. So all of that's on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And my website is just myname.com, johnudry.com. So all the dates and stuff are there. And updates are all on Twitter and all the social media stuff, which I'm desperately trying to keep track of.
And on John's website, there are much better videos of John juggling these days.
Yes.
Amazing. Thank you so much, John.
Great.
So if you enjoyed listening to the podcast, then please do give it a review on iTunes or whatever podcasting app you use. It makes a huge difference to how many people like yourself who discover it. And also, you know, tell your friends if you enjoyed this, tell your friend to give it a download. If you go onto Facebook and find I'd Sooner Forget This, or go onto Twitter and search I'd Sooner Forget, you'll be able to see the video that we watched today. And come back next week for another fabulous guest. Thank you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.